This is Audible.
Space Marine Apocalypse. Extinction Fleet, Volume 3. Written by Sean Michael Argo. Narrated by F. Ian DeMaster. The Fray. Once more into the fray. Into the last good fight I'll ever know. Live and die on this day. Live and die on this day. The Fray by Joe Carnahan. One. Raqqa. The watchman shivered upon his throne, a tremor of discomfort that his mentor insisted was a good sign. It meant that the man had not yet divorced himself from his physical body. Such a thing was an occupational hazard for the elite minds that ascended to the formerly glorious and now much maligned post of watchman. The old watchman had been killed on Hierot by an Alpha Garm, being referred to, in both battle records and general infantry slang, as Grendel. Though much time had passed, the old one and a sizable group of other Einherjar had yet to rise from the body forge. Their gift of resurrection had been taken from them. Their minds, forever it seemed, locked in the grasp of the alien psyche that dominated the vast swarms of the extinction fleet. The man's name had once been Sergei. Though in the early days of his training, within the tiny cadre that was the Watchman's Reserve Corps, it had already begun to lose its meaning. Divorce from the ego was an important part of the mental conditioning that reservists endured, and that often began with discarding their names. When you were the Watchman, that was all you were. The old one had been the first, and the new man found that he had a tremendously difficult throne to fill. After the old one died on Hierot, the throne lay vacant for a long time. Scald commanders Thatcher and Wallace after him had attempted to stand the watch as an emergency measure, but neither man, while great warriors in their own right, could do so with significant effectiveness. Just as it was with the Einherjar infantry, the selection process for the Reserve Corps eliminated all but the most promising individuals, and even they were often not up to the task. The vast network of cables that surrounded the Watchman like a cocoon were warm to the touch as they moved energy and information through his throne and into the core systems of his tower. The mobile war bunker was shaped like a sloping pyramid, the design lending itself towards deflecting incoming artillery. The weapon emplacements at the top of the structure gave the gunners a punishing angle of fire that would allow them to sweep attackers from the sheer face of the pyramid with ease. The bunker itself was elevated by a series of repulsor pads that enabled it to hover over the battlefield, drawn along by three heavily armored battle tanks that served not only as the primary locomotion for it, but also the structure's first line of defense. The watchman let a breath out slowly and refocused his mind, having realized he'd caught himself drifting through details instead of the task at hand. He was new at this, the first of the reservists to achieve enough success in the simulations to be allowed the title and command. The Scalds and Jarls of the Allfather's army, along with the captains of their warships, had all done their best to lead the Einherjar military by a sort of loose committee. It was high time a lone voice rose above the chorus. He was green, but while this might be his first true battle, the years of grueling training were proving their worth. The battlescape lit up in the watchman's eyes, the screen giving him a visual representation of what was happening on the planet's surface and in orbit. Though his subconscious was awash in cascading waves of data that poured in from infantry helmet feeds, tank cameras, orbital sensors, and artillery scanners, the human mind was not meant to comprehend such vast amounts of information, and yet, that was the precise purpose of the watchman: to process, analyze, and respond. In the weeks following the subterranean conflict on Tancred, which was still shrouded in mystery, a tremendous Garm force was flagged as en route to the front lines. The battlefront consisted of vast swaths of contested space, but most sectors were caught in a bloody stalemate that was reminiscent of historical conventional warfare. Contested planets were graveyards, consisting of ruined cities and landscapes made barren by war, and the vast appetites for resources held by the armies of both human and alien. The reinforced trench networks and battle bunkers of the Allfathers snaked across the planet's surface even as the tunnels and burrows of the hive mind riddled the ground beneath. The advance of the Extinction Fleet had been halted along this parallel of space, infantry and armored forces endlessly grinding against each other on these dead worlds while spacecraft skirmished in orbit above them. When the Extinction Fleet attacked en masse at the height of the conflict on Hiorot, the Garm had expanded much of their strength and were all but broken against the ramparts of humanity. The worst of the fighting was at the gates of Bifrost itself, which was consistent with conventional Garm military strategy to assault the strongest point in the enemy's defense. Upon breaking that, the entire line was likely to fold. The Einherjar, of course, knew this, and though it came at a great cost, the army of the Allfather held the line. The watchman keyed in a grid coordinate and his visual zoomed in on Hydra Company as the veteran warriors moved through the blasted shell of a vast city complex on their way to the impact site of a smaller vessel that had been shot down early in the orbital conflict. The Old One had foreseen something in this group of Marines, something that had drawn him away from his post at the battlefront. He had gone with Hydra and the others to Hiorot chasing a lone hive ship, and he had died there. The watchman felt something scratching against his psyche, an insistence that whatever thread of destiny the Old One had found was still active. The watchman was a soldier of stratagems and cold calculations, not one who stood for the narrative strategy nonsense that had plagued the ranks of the Allfather's army in the days without a man such as him at the throne. And yet here he was. Like the Old One, he'd felt a pull. Something instinctual, almost, that caused him to leave his position of security aboard the Bifrost and to join the warriors in the field. The tower lumbered forward, moving in a wide circle around the shattered city, the tanks keeping the pyramid well away from the urban environment. It was easier to move out here in the barren wasteland of the planet Raqqa, where the Raven air support and the potency of the escort tanks would be most effective and see most any threats coming. The watchman observed as Hydra Company picked their way through the ruins, executing any wounded Garm that yet remained. Raqqa had once been a thriving, prime planet, one that had found a way to balance the industrial productivity of urban sprawl with the natural bounty of agriculture and tourism. In other words, it was a world rich with biomass and therefore had been a key target for the Extinction Fleet. The Einherjar had stopped the Garm advance here, but the planet had been turned into a wasteland in the process. The grinding stalemate had held here for years, and the hive mind had seen fit to dispatch a sizable force to Raqqa in the wake of events on Tancred. The Watchman had met that challenge, and with mighty ships like Bright Lance and Reaper's Lantern, the spine frigates of the enemy were reduced to twisted wreckage, spewing ichor into the cold void of space. The Raqqa garrison was reinforced with fresh marines, and they repelled the furious assaults of Garm ground forces. It was the usual blunt strategy of the Extinction Fleet, though directing that raw force against Raqqa, and not the Bifrost, had drawn the Watchman's eye. It was no coincidence that he had dispatched Hydra Company to Raqqa. They'd already suffered 30% casualties, but he pushed them forward still. The Garm swarms had broken against the trench network, failing to even seize the first parallel before the might of the Einherjar cut them down. Jarl Mahora was a relentless commander, and the Watchman had known the vengeance-driven Jarl would whip his men into a killing frenzy when the enemy filled their sights. Hydra Company had suffered much on Hiorot, and worse since. Yet they continuously beat the odds. The Watchman scoffed at the narrative strategy, in public. In his most private moments, he felt a spark of something that other men might call belief. If the hive mind saw fit to make a play for Raqqa, then the Watchman would place Hydra Company directly in their path. He wondered if perhaps this was a test of his own doubts, as he observed Hydra Company killing its way through the city. If there was something to find on Raqqa, or some trap laid by the hive mind, and destiny was indeed a force that moved through reality as powerfully as physics, then Hydra Company would be right in the middle of it. In truth, the Watchmen simply expected Hydra Company to advance until they were either dead or victorious. He was confident that Yara Mahora's emotions would prevent him from wondering why his unit was being pushed so hard by command. Once the Marines of Hydra were all slain and without incident beyond the normal conditions of combat, he would be able to lay the narrative stratagem to rest in his mind. The army of the Allfather was vast indeed. Yet at every turn of events and upending of expectation, Hydra Company was in the middle of it. They had become a radical anomaly, no longer involved in the stalemate, but appearing to be part of something larger, where battles mattered more than the simple grind of attrition that held the extinction fleet at bay. That itself was taken by many as evidence of the narrative strategy having some merit. He intended to break that pattern today, finally putting to rest the false hope of the Legion's vast and the tiny doubts of his own mind. New data began to flood his awareness, and he toggled his visuals to the grid coordinates in question. Armor 1 had successfully swept in behind the landing zone for the primary cluster of brood ships and was in the process of pulverizing them. The Watchmen swiftly sent orders to several nearby Raven flights, commanding them to provide air support to the tank division while rerouting several Marine companies to march double time in that direction. The powerful guns of Armor 1 were already pulping the thick hides of the brood ships. Since the enemy vessels had disgorged most of their infantry cargo in the failed assault on the trench network, there was little to offer in the way of defense. They were, after all, barely more than empty shells now that they'd performed their task, though preventing them from returning was worth the ammunition. Every scrap of biomass that could be denied the Garm was a victory, measured in ounces, thought the Watchman as he watched the carnage unfold. While the enemy was hideously efficient at recycling their dead, a lesson taken from them that had yielded the Einherjar in the first place, there was still a net caloric loss each time they were defeated. Given that the fleet had been denied any further expansion, the enemy was forced to subsist on the worlds already conquered and what scraps they could scavenge from the war zone. As the Watchman was silently appreciating having tactically outmatched the numerically superior invasion force, an incoming transmission with Alpha codes took his attention away from Armor 1's grisly victory. Raven 6, go ahead, said the Watchman as he toggled his visuals over to the camera and scanner feeds coming from the one-man VTOL. Hydra Company has engaged the enemy, but something is baffling their comms. I must be far enough out and above that it's not affecting me, said the pilot crisply, and the Watchman could feel the tension in the man's voice. Raven 6 was as much a veteran as any infantryman, and that gave the Watchman pause. Stand by, said the Watchman as he toggled his visuals to where he'd last seen Hydra Company. Indeed, none of their troop locators were broadcasting, and where he thought they'd be standing was now a black hole of static. Something down there was scrambling all the scanners, even satellite sensors. Raven 6, I want you to make a low pass, ordered the Watchman. Even if the camera shorts, I need to see what I can. Raven 6 acknowledged, and the Watchman switched his visual feed to that of the pilot's onboard camera. The Ravens were small craft, little more than a flying cockpit with a mounted pulse rifle and a few low-yield rockets, but their lightweight and vertical takeoff turbines made them exceptional for recon. Their aerial dexterity had also proven effective in dogfights against Shriekers, though suicidal dives by the Garm Flyers kept the Ravens from being able to perform much beyond recon and support roles. Air superiority was difficult to maintain when the enemy was more than happy to kill itself and ruin its own chances at superiority just to deny it to you. The Watchman took note of just how low Raven 6 was flying, and was impressed at the skill of the pilot in maneuvering through the tight and treacherous urban environment. He made a quick note to recommend him for flight trainer duty, and then continued to observe. Raven 6 streaked over a rubble-strewn street, and soon the camera revealed what appeared to be a massive impact crater. All around it, the Marines of Hydra Company were aiming their weapons at something inside the crater. It appeared that a great many of the troops were actually marching down into it. Seconds later, Raven 6 went dark as the unknown baffle killed the pilot's troop locator, comms, and camera feed. 2. They feed.
"Weapons free!"
barked Yara Mahora, punctuating his command by putting a bolt through the thorax of a gorehound before it could unleash its own horrific projectiles. On either side of him, Marines opened up with their pulse rifles, and the swarms of Garm that were boiling out from underground were met with deadly fire. The Jarl kept marching forward, squeezing the trigger of his pulse rifle with speed and precision as he moved. Mahora could see that the impact of the Garm vessel had unearthed a sickeningly vast network of tunnels, but because of the damage, he couldn't tell right away if they were active or abandoned. They were at least half a click away from the first parallel of the Einherjar trench network, so these tunnels certainly would feed into the muster burrows that the attackers had used not an hour ago to launch their doomed assault. Cerberus Company was now cleaning those burrows and tunnels, mopping up survivors and setting charge tubes that would detonate and bring the earthworks down after the Marines had made their exit. Mahora shouted with a mixture of fury and disgust as one of the giant Garm digging grubs, the creatures that made the initial tunnels and burrows, emerged from the side wall of the crater. Whether it had been digging a new tunnel or simply attempting to escape the impact, he could not fathom. As its armored head punched out of the ground, there was nothing to do but fight. The creature's body undulated powerfully, its many layers of muscle propelling it through the ground as it heaved itself out of the wall and down towards the bottom of the crater right on top of the Marines. The Jarl watched as the massive creature's heavy body crushed two Marines underneath its bulk and impaled another Marine upon the many barbs that protruded from its armored head as it thrashed about. Mahora selected full auto on his pulse rifle and cut loose with it, unleashing bolt after bolt as he roared. Rama appeared at his side, one of the men who had once been part of the band of brothers that surrounded Ajax, and added his full auto fire to the Jarl's. The others of that doomed fraternity, Ford, Silas, and Sharif, were all corpses now, having died in the defense of the Einherjar trench positions, as had the blackout berserkers Boon and Yao, the two of them dead atop piles of slaughtered monsters. Who knew where Hart, the Marine sniper turned Scald, might be, or if the man was even on Raqqa at all? Jarl Mahora might have been a highly respected commander, and his voice held much weight in the Allfather's army, especially after his tour of duty as master of the Task Force Grendel Marine element. But at the end of the day, he was still only the leader of a single infantry company. "Better to lead from the front," growled Mahora in his own mind as he squeezed the trigger. He could kill more Garm that way. Their combined salvos ripped into the unarmored flanks of the great beast. As the superheated rounds cooked its insides, the creature swelled, then burst apart, showering Garm and Marine alike with heaps of smoldering meat and viscera. Mahora sprinted forward and slammed the haft of his rifle against the thorax of a Ripper drone. Just before the deadly blades of the beast or its far superior strength could be employed, the Jarl racked the slide of his rifle. The pent-up heat of the pulse rifle vented directly into the Garm's face and burned most of its head to ashes in an instant. The Jarl took a knee as two Marines stepped up to cover him, their sustained single shots driving the Garm defenders back. Mahora could see that he was kneeling upon the hull of a Garm ship, as well as the deep rents in the vessel likely caused by the weapons of Einherjar starships. He found himself wondering if the defenders they fought were denizens of the ship itself, or the tattered remnants of those swarms that had failed to take the trench. Their comms were blacked out, he'd noticed that as soon as they reached the lip of the crater, and was thankful he'd seen the ravens above. Maybe this new watchman had already dispatched a secondary force, which would make sense. After the fight for the trench, and now the brutal close-quarters struggle in the crater, Hydra Company was already at half strength.
"Time to see what new horrors they've bred for us to slay," growled Mahora as he chambered the first round of his rifle and stood to lead his men deeper into the darkness. "Hydra Company, on me!"
Mahora blasted a drone off its feet, and as the ranks of the Marines began to tighten up, the sheer firepower they were able to unleash began to turn the tide rather quickly. The defenders were a ragged lot, now that Mahora had a moment to truly observe them, and he was even more certain that these were the remnants of the swarms they'd destroyed at the trenches. Retreat was not the Garm way. It would take the psychic will of something like a war Garm to pull the lower broods away from a fight, even a losing one. They were too simple-minded to understand anything but attacking and feeding. Mahora was positive that down here somewhere was the answer, some prize the Garm had been sent to protect, or to at least distract the Marines from, while whatever it was made its escape. Mahora reached one of the vents in the hull and carefully peered over into it, the muzzle of his weapon just ahead of him. Just then a Gorehound sprinted into range from one of the unearthed tunnels and fired its weapon. The Jarl heard it rather than saw it, and the sound was troublingly familiar. He'd been killed a number of times in this seemingly endless war by just such a weapon before. Being eaten to death by dozens of tiny grubs was beyond unpleasant, and truth be told, the Jarl still took longer showers than he should, sometimes finding himself scrubbing his skin raw, as if trying to get out the memories of those particularly horrible deaths. A thick wad of voracious microgrubs sailed through the air towards him, and the Jarl did the only thing he could, and hurled himself in to the belly of the alien vessel. Someone above him screamed, and Marines returned fire. That sound was overpowered by the sharp crack of his impact on the chitinous decking of the Garm vessel. He landed on his left side, and even though the concussive force of the fall was mostly absorbed by his helmet and armor, the Marine's vision still swam briefly. He rolled onto his stomach and then pushed himself up, still disoriented. Before he could rise further, a Marine's body crunched loudly onto the deck beside him. The Marine was dead, though his body still convulsed wildly as the microgrubs from the Gorehound's vile weapon continued to perform their grisly purpose. Most of the grubs had been pulped against the Marine's body armor, but enough of them had gotten through that they'd been able to devour flesh from the man within. The grubs were biologically programmed to feed until they burst. Then, while deep inside the enemy's body, it was these tissue-rending secondary explosions that made the corpse twitch so violently. "Rama, pull security on the crater and kill anything that moves," shouted Mahora up through the hole, snapping his attention to the battle at hand to avoid vomiting inside his helmet. "And get me a squad of shooters with a grenadier, ASAP." The Marine above gave him a thumbs up. The Jarl ignited his body lights and switched on his mounted rifle light. He was in a sloping corridor that opened into what appeared to be a larger chamber ahead. He could see that the large weapons of the Einherjar warships had gouged great holes in the ship, though as he moved through the corridor, he could see that thin membranes had grown over several parts of the hull. It made sense, now that he thought about it, that the ship would regrow such things in order to avoid rapid and devastating decompression as the ship was exposed to the hard vacuum of space. Yet another evolutionary advantage they have over us, thought the Jarl, as he considered the fact that on human warships those decks were just sealed off and repaired later. More Marines leaped down to join him. He could still hear the sounds of fighting above him in the crater and estimated that Hydra Company now had a solid defensive position. Establishing a perimeter at the bottom of a hole with so many enemy tunnels now exposed would be a feat measured in minutes and gunfire, so he knew they had to move quickly. There was no telling how many attackers had been drawn away from the trench fight to defend this ship, so for all he knew, entire swarms were en route, and without comms he had no way of giving the Watchman anything. Just like Hierat, they were just going to have to go in guns blazing and hope they found something worth the lives it would take to hold the ground. That suited Jarl Mahora just fine, as he'd always preferred a bloody brawl with the enemy over the more dynamic conflicts he'd endured from Hierat onwards. Leave all of that asymmetrical warfare to the Skalds, he decided as he peered down his iron sights and made his way through a gaping hole in the wall to enter the central chamber. I'll take my fight straight up. 6 men fell in behind Mahora as the Jarl swept his light across the chamber. As the Marines moved into the area, multitudes of bioluminescent cells seemed to awaken, possibly reacting to the new lights that were shining across the room. In seconds, the whole chamber was bathed in an odd blue light, and with the help of their own lights, the Marines were able to see that the chamber was easily the size of a modest warehouse. Mahora had a moment to think to himself that this chamber must comprise nearly 2/3 of the ship's total length before a series of alien screams demanded his full attention. "Arrow on me," ordered Mahora in a low voice. The Marines snapped their rifles to their shoulders as they flanked him on either side, the men on the outer edges of the formation standing somewhat beside and behind the men before them, so that there were three Marines on either side, with Mahora acting as the tip of a V. The Jarl moved his rifle in front of him, scanning ahead. From his vantage point, to his disgust, the chamber appeared to be filled with some kind of massive living organs. Each of them was the size of a 30-foot shipping container, stacked three deep and separated by thick gelatinous membranes that Mahora assumed must exist to absorb gravitational force and reduce friction. What purpose they served, he couldn't imagine. With a swift glance across what he could see of the chamber, he determined that there had to be at least 50 or 60 of them set out in a grid. The screams continued, and the Jarl moved his squad along one of the natural corridors created by the stacked organs. He wanted to reach an intersection as soon as he could so that they'd have the best range of fire, depending on where the enemy came from. If the fight went poorly, they could fall back along whichever corridor was the least infested with enemy beasts. As they moved, Mahora began to get the impression that the bioluminescence of the organs was increasing. The light in the room had brightened to the point that the Marines could have turned off all their own lights if they chose to, and still see perfectly. "Why don't they just charge, damn it?" grumbled Mahora to himself as he and the Marines reached an intersection. The Jarl brought up his fist and then pointed at each Marine individually before gesturing which corridor they should cover. In seconds, the squad had one rifle pointed down each corridor with Mahora and the Grenadier, a man with "Pool" stenciled across his chest, manning the center. They stood silently, listening to the muffled sounds of battle raging above. The screams were sporadic, and Mahora started to wonder if the enemy was circling them, which would be a fine tactic, though certainly not something the average Ripper drone or Gorehound would do. It was the Garm way to charge in and rend. Mahora had not known the aliens to be what one might consider ambush predators. More screams filled the chamber. Before Mahora could pin down where he thought it was coming from, one of the brightly glowing organs at the bottom of a stack of three went into violent spasms and ruptured. As one, the Marines gaped while a virtual flood of stinking organic sludge burst forth and swept over the deck in a wave. "Contact! Contact!" shouted a Marine to the Jarl's left, freeing them from their momentary shock, and began firing single shots down his corridor. Mahora saw dark shapes moving through the stacks towards them. The Marine continued to fire, but most of his shots missed their intended targets because he was firing at movement rather than the actual enemy. The errant bolts tore into the glowing organs, causing several of them to explode with sufficient force to cause others nearby to rupture and add to the putrid lake they were now standing in. "Contact, right!" shouted another Marine as he fired, and soon the Marines were shooting in all directions. It felt to Mahora as if their inability to clearly see the enemy despite the glow in the chamber was no accident, just as the comms dead zone surrounding this ship could not have been a simple environmental anomaly. He could see the bodies of alien creatures fly in different directions when one of the Marines finally scored a hit. From the chaos of alien screams rising over the sporadic gunfire, Mahora knew that in seconds their position would be overrun. Even though the Einherjar weapons were potent, in close-quarters battle the advantage was squarely with the Garm. The Jarl was suddenly struck with an idea and grabbed the Grenadier by the shoulder before sweeping his hand across the entirety of the chamber. "Something in here is messing with our tech," said Mahora as he pointed Poole's attention to the organ stacks. "Knock out the stacks in a 360 from our position." Poole nodded his understanding, and Mahora took a knee beside the man as the Grenadier raised his weapon. Poole squeezed the trigger rapidly as he stepped in a swift circle, methodically emptying his grenade cylinder at the bottom organs of stacks all around the Marines. While the Grenadier knelt to reload, Mahora stood up, his rifle at the ready. He had just gotten the stock nestled into his shoulder when the grenades began to detonate. As the explosives ripped apart the base organs, the force of the blasts caused organs above and nearby to rupture, and in seconds the entire chamber was flooding with a tsunami of organic material. "Fire on movement!" shouted Mahora as he peered through his iron sights at a thrashing shape struggling to rise from the sludge. Mahora squeezed the trigger and let out a whoop of victory as he witnessed his bolt pound into something. In an instant, whatever it was had been reduced to chunks of meat and what appeared to be tentacles that flew in all directions. As the Jarl had hoped, many of the alien monsters had been knocked down by the salvo of grenades and the resulting flood of rupturing organs and their flowing contents. He saw another creature pulling itself up from the now waist-deep sludge and dropped it with two well-placed rounds. More explosions rocked the chamber as Poole launched a second salvo. The assembled marines kept pouring on the fire whenever they caught sight of the beasts. A heavy splash to Mahora's left drew his weapon towards it. He couldn't see the creature itself, but he absolutely could see the disturbance in the sludge as it rushed towards him. Three bolts later, and the Jarl's pulse rifle reduced the thing to a stinking mess. More fire sounded from the rent in the chamber wall, and another group of five marines entered. Mahora was about to shout a warning when one of the marines was picked up out of the sludge by one of the alien nightmares. For a moment, the Jarl thought he could make out the details of the beast, but he realized it was more that he was seeing what the monster was doing to the marine that helped his imagination fill in the gaps. It was taller than a Ripper drone, and it had tentacles, but both marine and beast disappeared in a spray of superheated gas and gore as the man's comrades fired on it at point-blank range. Poole shouted at the new marines to fire on movement just before the marine on Mahora's right was also hit by a creature. The Jarl opened fire on full auto, knowing that he would finish off his comrade, but determined not to allow the creature a kill without losing its own life. His pulse rifle bucked as he pumped round after round into the pair. He was rewarded with wet detonations of marine and beast, and both sets of remains sank into the sludge. The shooting had stopped, Mahora realized, though the screaming had not. The Jarl turned and saw that Poole had dropped his grenade launcher and was grasping at something beneath the brown stew in which they stood. At first, the Jarl was confused, and then he felt something begin to burn his knees. The blood froze in his veins as he realized that the knee joint was one of the few weak points in standard Einherjar armor, where the plates covering the calf, knee, and thigh all met. There were many seams where a precise blade or bullet could shatter the extra thin armor that allowed the marines to articulate their movements. He stole a glance at some of the few remaining organs as they too ruptured on their own and spilled their contents into the swiftly rising flood. Mahora scooped up a handful of the organic material and looked more closely. To his eyes, it looked like wheat or oats, seeds of some kind at the very least, but as if they'd already been cooked. It was like a flood of disgusting porridge, bespeckled with the bioluminescent garm cells. Then it hit him. This was digestions of some kind. The organs were like stomachs, and now he and his men were standing mid-chest in corrosive digestive fluids. "Abort! Get topside now!" shouted Mahora on the pier-to-pier. Then he rushed towards Poole, who had collapsed from the pain, his helmet just barely visible above the sludge. The Jarl switched over to the company channel. "Hydra Company, form up and fall back! Rama, get me a three-man extraction team in the hole! Everyone else, get back!" To his surprise, the Jarl got an affirmative from Rama, which he'd only half expected given the difficulty with the comms in this area. The angle of the crashed vessel, nose down into the earth, was causing the digestive sluice to drain into the rest of the ship. The Jarl was unfamiliar with this specific Garm vessel and had little experience in the void battles fought by the Allfather's warships, though he'd seen what schematics Command had for a number of the ships in the Extinction Fleet. Most of them followed similar designs, with each ship brood having a passing resemblance to the other, just like the infantry swarms he was intimately familiar with battling. If his guess was correct, there would be pods or sacks that contained a cocktail of fluids and gases that served as the Garm's biological equivalent of fuel. Once the digestive slime poured its way through those, the whole ship had a significant chance of exploding. In fact, he mused as he waded towards where Poole went down, as useful as bursting the organs had been in helping the marines fight whatever the hell that swarm had been. The seemingly rapid decomposition of the organs and resulting flood of caustic fluids would end up serving as a rather effective self-destruction method. The thought that such a thing could be by design was chilling indeed. The Jarl swallowed his disgust and knelt down in the sludge, submerging himself so that he could get Poole across his shoulders. When the Jarl stood up, the corrosive material ran off his armor, though from the pain that was beginning to course through his system, he knew that much of it was biting through the seams in the armor. The Einherjar combat armor was a stout thing indeed, capable of sustaining integrity in both immersive aquatic and hard vacuum environments. What it was not designed for was being covered in alien stomach bile. Mahora saw only one of his original six-man squad wallowing through the sludge ahead of him, and assumed that the others had been killed in the tempest of battle, or succumbed to the flood. Either way, they were lost, and it was highly likely that their torques would be lost as well. So be it. If a marine lost his memory of a few battles, that didn't matter. It was a small thing in the grand scheme of the war. Hierot, that cursed blight of a world, thought Mahora, as he did everything he could not to think about the sizzling sound his cheek was making now that the stinking fluid had melted a hole in his faceplate. The ghost of that bastard Grendel seemed to haunt them still. The Alpha Garm had become an icon representative of the new Garm war effort. No longer were the Garm the simple, if terrifying, force of aliens bent on simple consumption. While that might be the hive mind's end game, the enemy had become a most cunning one, testing and punishing the Einherjar at every turn for their complacency in tactics. Grendel was the start of it, and every time the Jarl lost a marine, some part of his soul shuddered with a tiny fear that he might not be able to bring his marines back. He was a grunt who had risen to the role of Jarl in the early days of the war. Mahora found himself remembering those days as he pushed himself against the pain, sloshing his way up to and through the artillery hole blasted through the chamber wall. The Jarl emerged into a firefight that filled up both sides of the small access corridor, and he realized how lucky, or not, depending on one's perspective, he had been in choosing to enter the artillery hole as opposed to following the corridor. It appeared, in the strobing glare of muzzle flashes and ambient glow of marine body lights, that the corridor sloped upwards, following the contours of the ship. Ripper drones had either slipped past Rama's firing line and come in behind Mahora's team, or had come up from a different part of the ship, as the Jarl saw the broken bodies of several littering the ground. He also saw the splattered remains of two marines spread across the corridor, while two more continued the fight. One marine had taken up a firing position so that he could direct his aim up the corridor while another fired downwards into the darkness near the front of the ship. Mahora glanced at Poole hanging limply over Mahora's shoulder and saw that the man had passed out from the pain of the corrosion. It was one thing to bear the pain as Mahora was struggling to do, but another thing entirely for the Jarl to see its effects on a body. He dared not investigate himself or look too closely at Poole, who was unconscious across his shoulders, though it was impossible not to steal a sideways glance at his fallen comrade. The armor was twisted and warped as if he'd been splashed with acid, which, in effect, the man had. Then the marine stirred, and the Jarl's heart leaped into his throat. Maybe he could save them both, as command needed all the intel they could get from their memories. The Jarl suspected that any moment now, the corrosive fluids would reach one of the biofuel pods and the whole ship would detonate. As the two standing marines continued to cover their corridors, the Jarl settled Poole onto the deck next to the first marine.
Rama, where's my extraction?
Snarled Mahora as he slung his rifle around and slid a fresh carbon magazine into place, hoping that the robust weapon's exceedingly simple construction and heavy alloy would prevent most of the corrosive fluid's ravages.
Rama is dead, sir. Swarms converging on crash site,
said a marine unfamiliar to Mahora, his voice somewhat garbled with static.
Abhijita, Cerberus Company, the Jarl moved 30 of us up to support Hydra. Dispatching extraction now.
Mahora opened his mouth to answer when his comms went full static and he realized he could not send or receive. The Jarl turned to use his peer-to-peer and saw that the marines on either side of him were no longer standing. On the right, in the corridor that sloped upwards, the marine handling that end was leaning against the wall, with his guts spilled out across the decking. No more enemies seemed to be coming from that direction, but the man's life was measured in but a few scant moments. On Mahora's left was pitch darkness, and no marine in sight. Mahora tried his peer-to-peer again, and when he looked back, he could see the wounded man tapping his helmet and shaking his head, Only static was making it through. The Jarl ripped his helmet from his head, partly out of frustration and partly to relieve himself of more garm bile burning his face. His instincts flared with alarm and he raised his weapon, pointing it unconsciously back down the artillery wound in the side of what he now thought of as the digestion chamber. The Jarl risked holding his rifle at midguard, tucking it into the crook of his elbow so that he could reach his belt with the other hand and grab a flare. All his joints were screaming with near mind-numbing pain to the point that his fingers quaked with palsy as he thumbed the activator on the flare. He fired the burning projectile into the hole. From the ragged explosion of light, something so horrible emerged that even the hard-bitten veteran couldn't help screaming as he pulled the trigger.
No! We killed you! I watched you die on Hiorot!
At first, the only thing he'd been able to see was the elongated head of a wargarm. Mahora had faced down a number of them in his long career against the alien menace, a few times even on his own. But as the creature's jaws opened, he knew this was something different. The serpentine body undulated, propelling the beast across the deck, its movement unhampered by the remaining digestive slime that was still at least a foot deep. The creature's roar boomed in the tight confines of the ravaged vessel, and the sound of it joined with the report of Mahora's rifle to make the Jarl's hearing flatline from overload. His first bolt spanked off the plates protecting its enlarged skull, deflecting that and several more indirect hits. Mahora took a shaky step back and slipped, whether from the various fetid substances coating the deck, the pain, or just the shock of it all, he could not tell. His back slammed against the far wall and he slid down, the haphazard stumble the only thing that kept him alive as the Alpha Garm's two bioblated fore appendages tore into the empty air where he'd just been standing. But for the most minute of circumstances, Mahora would have been impaled. He was still screaming with a mixture of fear and fury, but his soldier's discipline empowered him to continue firing his weapon. Bolts pounded into the beast, the close proximity of the muzzle to the monster's body, enabling the plasma projectiles to overwhelm the creature's thinner underbelly armor. The Jarl felt a cold pain in his side and the sickening sensation of a foreign object scraping against the base of his spine. An instant later, the Alpha Garm exploded, its insides expanding as they were superheated, filling both the corridor and the Jarl with chitinous shrapnel. Mahora's eyes fluttered open, and he reflexively wiped an armored hand across his face to clear the gore. He was concussed, of that he was certain. His vision swam as he struggled to get his bearings. The sound of boots landing on the decking took his attention away from the remains of the beast, and he saw Abegida's extraction squad rushing towards him. He could only have been out for a few seconds, as the viscera of the beast was still hot on his skin, and the digestive juices he was covered in still burned as it ate at several parts of his body. The Marines were lifting Poole onto the shoulders of the largest of the Einherjar as Mahora turned to look back down the corridor. Next to him, just in arm's reach, was the beast's head, mostly intact. The Jarl ignored the pain that threatened to take him unconscious again and grabbed the head by the bloody stump of its neck. He dragged it to him, though he was too weak to pick it up, and turned the face towards him.
Grendel, snarled Mahora, as he beheld the alien visage looking back at him.
Minutes later, just as the extraction team managed to get Mahora, Poole, and the Alpha Garm's head out of the crater, the alien vessel exploded. Whatever secrets it still held in its dark corridors had gone with it to the grave. Three. Meat. Ford activated his helmet's ocular assist and sucked in his breath at what his augmented sight now beheld. The sloping hills in this region of the Agra planet were known for having rainstorms, such as the one they were now in, and vital pastures in equal measure. The sensors from Bright Lance should have given them at least some manner of intel data through the cascading sheets of rain, though the Garm had found a way to baffle such orbital devices. Thankfully, whatever method the Garm were using to do so had not been fully perfected, as the baffle only covered a small portion of the region. While they might have been able to cover up exactly what they were doing down there, they were unable to obscure where it was that they were doing it. Ford and the others had been sent in blind, though that was to be expected, as the Marines were much more expendable than vehicles. The target area was a pasture and livestock complex with grass-covered acres and a modest yet efficient shelter pen and loading dock. Farming operations were simple on this world, the industrial processes having been long abandoned in favor of a more hands-on approach. While it might mean higher-priced meat for the citizens of the United Humanity Coalition, it was sustainable. It was the same for most food producers in the UHC, since it was the only way to feed many trillions in the long term. Ford himself had never been concerned with where his food came from, nor had he thought much about the economics of agriculture. For him, food was only sustenance, fuel for the fight, and he imagined it was the same for the enemy he fought from one end of the universe to the other. Sharif had split their small force into three groups of five so that they could sweep the pastures while Jarl Mahora secured the complex. The hard-bitten bastard was hunting something Ford had realized when the marching orders came down. The Marine was reminded of the bird hunting of his youth. After the battle on Raqqa, he had awakened in the Body Forge, beside many of his brothers, and had been given leave by Idris to return to his unit just as the attendants had brought Jarl Mahora to the facility. He'd been burned, stabbed, and blown up, but the son of a bitch was still alive. It was the first time Ford had ever seen a Marine euthanized in order to speed up their return to battle instead of allowing them to heal. The Jarl was in deep shock and talking to himself about Grendel, the Alpha Garm from Heorot, or perhaps he was speaking to his family. The names he uttered were unfamiliar to the men present. In that moment, the euthanasia seemed like a kind of mercy. Ford had never married, so did not carry the burden of a lost love on his shoulders or the name of a half-remembered dead wife on his lips, as so many of the other Einar Jar. While some thought, perhaps, that was good, Ford regularly found himself jealous of such scraps of their former identities. He could barely recall anything of his former life, beyond the impression that it was something very average, rather pedestrian. Ford was positive that he'd been some kind of salaryman, an office worker type, though instead of a specific home planet, he only had vague notions of a multitude of space stations. He decided he must have been with a traveling company. No family, no relationships, just a guy and his job. It was not the business of the Allfather's army to provide details about the former lives of the Einar Jar, and in many ways that was best. It prevented further psychological trauma. Better to have super soldiers without emotional baggage seemed to be the official position, and for the most part, Ford was inclined to agree. Maybe if he'd had a family, he would have felt differently, but alas, that was not the case. For him, all that remained was the hunting, which seemed to have been a cornerstone in Ford's former life. It made sense, given that he was a working bachelor who probably had cash to spend, and the fleeting glimpses of memory painted the picture of an enthusiastic sport hunter. Perhaps it was the hunt and the kill that stayed with Ford, because that was all about his former life that served his current one. The glove seemed to fit, he thought to himself, as he knelt down to examine a set of prints. They'd found nothing but churned up mud and uneaten grass, not a single bovine organism in sight. They'd pressed deeper into the pasture lands. And Ford stood now with four other Marines, mouths agape at the horror before them. They had found the cows. The bovine livestock had been heaped into several large piles, each of the animals appearing to have been killed by a traumatic strangulation, judging by the lesions on their throats. A deep sucking sound came from the other side of the piles, and instantly rifles were at the ready, each snarling to life with menace. The five small beams of light from the mounted devices on their pulse rifles illuminated the great heaps of bodies. Just behind one of the piles, a thick tentacle rose up and wrapped around one of the cows, lifting it up into the air. Their lights followed the cow's body upwards. The thin beams straining to cut through the pouring rain were enough to allow a glimpse of a many-toothed sucker mouth envelop the cow's body in a single swallow. A brilliant flash of lightning bathed the scene in a near-blinding light, giving the Marines a shockingly clear view of what had appeared to eat the cow whole. It was a Garm organism, its body resembling a cephalopod, though it had the same chitin body armor and sloping angles that the other variants had evolved with. It hung in the air, just above the piles of bovine livestock, and Ford presumed that the undulating bladders that inflated and deflated just beneath its mass of seeking tentacles were filled with a gas of some kind that gave it buoyancy. They were called feeders by the common soldiers, though most of the Marines had never seen one. The Scalds had given enough recon reports over the years that every man had been provided with a basic briefing on them.
"Kill it!"
shouted Ford, snapping out of his paralysis and squeezing the trigger of his rifle, pumping several hastily aimed rounds at the feeder creature. The beast howled as rounds tore into its bulbous flesh, though it could have just been the hiss of escaping gas from its bladders as it rocketed backward into the night. The Marines, now emboldened by the need to purge this world of the Garm terror, surged forward and continued to fire. Ford knew he probably wasn't hitting anything out there in the night, but it felt good to drive the beast away. He'd been struck dumb at the sight of the nightmare, as had his comrades, and though that was common enough for Marines when they faced new broods, it shamed him to a degree that he'd given pause. The Garm swarms had evolved little since the extinction fleets first appeared from the abyss of deep space. Another scream filled the night, this time human, as a shape streaked out of the rain to plow into the squad of Marines. Ford turned towards the sound, quickly enough, to see a Marine yanked off of his feet by a Garm organism that looked completely unfamiliar. It was a spindly beast, easily 7 feet tall, but didn't possess even close to the same levels of tightly packed musculature or body armor of the typical Garm creatures. It reminded Ford of the praying mantis insects that lived on plenty of the more lush UHC worlds, yet in place of the great claws of such an insect, the Garm beast sported a multitude of sickeningly articulated tentacles, each ending in a barb that appeared to weep fluid that he had no doubt was toxic. The Marine it had snatched was already convulsing as the creature attempted to drag him away into the night, his body spasms probably a result of the toxins. Before the creature could make good its escape, the Marine, unwilling to die so easily, lashed out with his trench spike, burying the point of it into the wet ground. The dying Marine put all his strength into gripping the handle of the spike. It didn't stop the beast from dragging him across the ground, but it slowed progress enough for Ford to line up a shot. When he squeezed the trigger, Ford's finger felt resistance and realized too late that he'd fired his 10 shots, and now the weapon had seized up from overheating. It had been a long time since Ford had failed in his rifle discipline. He dropped his rifle with a growl of frustration so that he could reach for his pistol. The beast's eyes shone black, and he was sure it realized what had happened. It responded by letting go of the dying Marine and fleeing, melting into the dark by the time Ford and the others brought their weapons to bear.
"Ocular assist should ping on it," snapped Silas as he swept his rifle back and forth over the piles of dead cows. "There's nothing to hide behind but grass."
"Circle up," responded Ford as he slotted his sidearm back in its holster and vented his rifle. "Something out there is jamming our tech. My company channel is all static, just the close-range peer-to-peer is working."
"On the left," barked a Marine, and Ford turned to see the tentacled stalker rushing at them.
This time, his rifle was ready, and concentrated bursts from him and the Marine who'd spotted it tore the creature apart with surprising ease. What it had gained in speed and agility, thanks to its elongated body and thinner body armor, was less protection against the deadly rounds that pounded into its flesh. The creature's body blew apart as the bolts caused rapid expansion of gas and heat, coating the muddy ground with a thick layer of scorched gore. A gurgling sound on his right made Ford turn. His eyes were met with the sight of Silas hovering in the air about a meter off the ground. Another stalker had taken advantage of the distraction and engaged. The barbs of its tentacles were buried in the Marine's body, one having been driven up underneath his chin, and the other punching through the seam in his armor where thigh met groin. Ford and the remaining 2 Marines opened up on the beast, though their shots were spoiled as the creature hurled the body of Silas at them. The Marine's corpse smacked into Ford, and he went sprawling into the mud. By the time he'd shoved the body of his friend off, the enemy had vanished behind one of the heaps of cows and was blasting great blossoms of gore out of a nearby stack.
He sprang to his feet and raised his rifle, feeling, rather than seeing, that another stalker, or perhaps the same one, was rushing up behind him. By the stars, they were quiet, he thought, as he filled his iron sights with alien flesh, no battle cry and footfalls barely audible. Ford shredded the stalker's fragile body with fire and snarled in satisfaction as he watched its steaming remains splatter in every direction. Ford and the other Marine stood back to back and continued to fire as another stalker attempted to ambush them. With their ocular modes ineffective, it was difficult to see them coming, and there was no hearing them. Fighting by sight alone as the rain fell in thick sheets, the Marines fired any time they caught a glimpse of the enemy. "Are we surrounded, or are they just that fast?" asked one of the Marines, as he fired a volley which hit nothing but mud, filling the air with the smell of burned dung and dirt. "They're probing us to hide their numbers. If they had a full swarm, they'd just rush us," said the other Marine in answer. Ford said nothing, as his mind was racing at the thought of a new brood of Garm, and the fact they fought with some degree of tactical awareness. He and the others had all been briefed on the strange swarm encountered in what had come to be referred to as the Horde Vessel on Raqqa, and these enigmatic beasts certainly seemed to fit the profile. It might not be the smooth and deadly grace of a soldier, but there was something to it, a hunter's patience that made him think of sharks and wolves at the same time. This was indeed something new and had to be reported. Given what had happened to Ajax and the others down in the sewers on Tancred, where their torques had been intentionally damaged by the traitors in order to rob them of their memories, it was no longer wise to assume that their torques would be recovered after their deaths. His rifle hit its heat max and the Marine paused to vent, and as he took a knee to do so, a tentacle swept through the air where he'd just been standing. Two stalkers had attacked this time, and as the Marine to Ford's left blasted one to pieces, the other tore into the Marine on Ford's right. Ford scampered backward across the thick mud and fired from a prone position as his remaining comrade unleashed a burst from his rifle. The stalker's body was shattered by the concentrated fire, though its death served as an opportunity for yet another stalker to come up behind the standing Marine. Blood sprayed across Ford's visor as multiple tentacles ripped into the Marine's body. Ford saw in the distance, just beyond the carnage of battle, that the feeder beast had returned, and with two others. The Marine lurched to his feet as cows disappeared into suckered mouths, and then began running. Four Marines dead in a matter of moments, and though they'd taken their pound of flesh from the Garm, they'd done nothing to stop the feeders from seizing a feast. Ford sprinted through the rain, his muscles burning with the effort in spite of his soldier's conditioning, as he pushed himself to stay ahead of the hideous killer's pursuit. He had no clue how many, if any, were behind him or on his flanks, and decided that the nickname Stalker was vastly appropriate for this new brood. As he ran,